back to USL Aces. This is your host, Tom Sweezy. Not really sure when this interview is coming out, but it doesn't mean it's going to be a bad one, because I am sitting down with Elliot Barr. Elliot is the host of River City 93, a podcast about the Richmond Kickers. Elliot, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. It's the same that happens on our podcast. We never know when we're going to release episodes. We just know to get put out there.
Well, so this week, I'll give a little peek behind the curtain for people listening. This week, I sat down and I've recorded a conversation with Mike Watts, who was a really cool conversation, pretty much the voice of USL. And now I'm sitting down talking to you. So one's coming out this week, one's coming out next. So I'm going to figure out which one's which when I upload it. So figure it out then. But thanks for coming on.
trial and error.
That's pretty much all it is. So I said this to you only moments ago off recording, but I've never really kind of had the chance to sit down and really talk to a Richmond Kickers fan, someone of the organization, a player within the organization, and really learn about the history and kind of like what the Kickers mean to the city. So I mean, can we just start with, I know you guys are one of the oldest soccer clubs in America. Does that, like, show, do you feel? Does that really show within the organization?
Yes, it does, because we are the oldest. I will never let Charleston know that they are the oldest. We are the oldest professional football team.
I'm letting you guys go with that.
No, it does show. I mean, if you look at our stadium, that's a clear indication. And then also about, like, how the club, I would say we're one of the more traditional clubs. To be honest, you're probably the exact opposite of Ford Madison in the way how they do things and how vibrant they are. I mean, just for instance, look at our jerseys. Our jerseys are completely the same, I think. There hasn't been a major change in our jerseys till this year. And Ford Madison has already changed and chopped and changed their kits already within year two. So that's how we're more about 15. We're more and more traditional teams.
I mean, I think that's a good thing, though. You know, like, not every single team needs to be like you said, like a Forward Madison to have that success, right? But at the end of the day, you guys have been around for the longest time in America for a reason, because you guys, even though, you know, you bounce around between different leagues, there's still that I feel like that system behind the scenes that just make this thing successful and make this thing, as other teams fold, you guys just keep it going. So,
yeah. When and you, I mean, it,
no, sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, it's really impressive the fact, because not a lot of people might know this, but the Richmond Kickers were owned by a youth club for the majority of the history. It wasn't until last year that we just had an owner. So even you add that into the mix, like, this professional team is being owned by the youth club, and then you start to wonder, like, yo, how are they even operational?
Have you seen it's amazing. Now that you said that, because I didn't know that. Now that you said that, have you seen any differences with an owner instead of being owned by a youth club?
Yeah, I would say, especially the marketability of the club is a lot bigger. The things they're able to do. I mean, when you're owned by a youth club, you're kind of restricted to the money you get from the youth club. Mm. X number of players sign up, X number of dollars you get. With having an owner, it's kind of different, because now you have like owners that have a pool of money. We actually had our first transfer ever. Before, players, if they wanted to leave, they just left on a free. It was kind of like a 1-year deal, maybe with an option, maybe not with an option. And our first transfer was Joey Gallardo. That's when, you know, when we all signed him back, some of us were like, oh, wow, we signed Joey back, because we all thought that he was gone. And then the more I sat down and talked to people about it, it was like, no, he really just signed back so y'all could just transfer him.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's kind of the thing you got to get used to with having an owner. They're looking to make money. I understand it. It would be cool to keep Joey around. I would love to see him and Emiliano kind of team up this year. But other parts about having an owner is kind of, like the jerseys, for instance, you know, our jersey's kind of been the same. This is the first year I would say our jersey has took a step forward. Stuff inside the club about how, like, they do the press boxes, how they sell tickets, things like that have changed. You know, there's been some up and downs. There's been some real, like, F the owner type statements. But, overall, I would say it's in the positive. The guys seem like they have their hearts in the right place. You know, I'm glad we don't have an owner like the one in Lansing that just shut down shop because he thought that this would make the same money as a minor league club, which was stupid. So, I'm proud of that.
I mean, obviously with an ownership group or just an owner in general, right? Things are different. Not all decisions that are made fans are going to love, but not all decisions fans, you know, like the ownership makes fans are going to hate at the same exact time. But I mean, like you said a little bit, with, like, the marketability of how tickets are being sold and how, like, the jerseys are being, like, changed a little bit, be kind of maybe steering away from the traditional just a little bit. What's that kind of marketing and connection to the city, right? Like, do you, like, drive down the street in Richmond and do you see, like, Kickers logos and things, like, on cars and, like, you know, around people's, like, businesses and such?
Yes, I do. And I think more of that comes from the youth club perspective, because a lot of the players of the club are youth coaches as well. So a lot of the parents will have, like, the Kicker sticker on the back of their car. There are some billboards and things like that. It's weird to describe, like, for those who have come to Richmond, they'll understand. And for those who hasn't, it'll be a little bit harder to understand. But the Richmond Kickers have stayed primarily on the west end of Richmond. Okay. And, like, the business district of Richmond. They haven't really gone out into the urban district, and that's just because of the demographic of people that were pretty much paying for the club. You know, me being African-American, I'm one of the few African-American people that go to the Richmond Kickers games faithfully. So I was having a conversation with the owner, and he was just asking me, like, generally just asking me questions, because he's new to Richmond as well. He was like, yo, why isn't there more push, you know, of people wanting to come from different parts of the city? And he was like, we're in a localized part. Like, really what City Stadium is easily accessible from all parts of the city. So that's not the hard of it. It's just a fact that the Richmond Kickers getting their name out there. And I was honest with him. I was like, because everyone looks at the Richmond Kickers as being white.
Yeah.
I mean, this team plays at City Stadium, which used to be owned by U of R, which is, you know, if for those who don't know, I think the nickname for U of R is, like, one of the Ivy League schools of the South, that and William & Mary. So the fact that, you know, you have that attached to it, and kind of going back in the history, my mom is born and raised in Richmond. She was telling me stories about how African-Americans weren't allowed on the West End of Richmond, how they weren't allowed in U of R Stadium. So it's kind of been, like, a taboo thing to go to that place. And it's not like U of R plays there anymore. They move their football games from City Stadium to on campus, but it's still that stigma behind it. And I was just explaining to him about how, if you guys want to, you know, market yourself as the city's club, then you have to market in all parts of the city and not just on one side. But once again, that's due to the fact that because of the majority of the people that was paying for the club's wages and playing the club's bill were the youth club, and most of those people lived in West End and Short Pump, so they stayed in a small circle. And now that we have an owner, he can't just do that anymore. I mean, not an owner, it's not a single owner, a ownership body. Yeah. He has to pretty much now look at the whole city and think about, like, all right, how can I incorporate all of this into one?
So how would you, this is really interesting to me, how would you like for him to, like, market it? Like, how would you like for him to incorporate the whole city instead of kind of just sectioning off part of it?
I would think about it in a tierway system, almost think about it as this. You already know you have the West End of Richmond on lock, and it's, if you take Richmond, you could divide it up into four sections. You have West End, East End, North Side, and South Side. So what I would most predominantly do is, you already know you got West End. So then I would then focus to moving more towards South Side Richmond, which you have a large Latin American community at. And think about putting soccer programs there. It's going to be a slow burn. It's going to take time. But if you put the soccer programs there and you establish a rapport with people and people feel comfortable with you and you make it. And I know I said earlier that it's easy access to get to City Stadium. Not everyone has a ride. So if you can figure out a way, I think it was Greenville Triumph or another USL club where they would literally drive a bus around, like, the local bars and pick people up to come to the games. And that's something that I mentioned to the Richmond Kickers, that that would be something cool to do if you set up hub spots throughout the city for people to come to the games. Another thing can be is to get out into the school districts. And if you get the kids interested, Nine times out of ten, the parents are going to want to come because they're getting tired of their kid bugging them about, mommy, 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 I want to go to these games, mommy, mommy, mommy. So if you get the parents involved with it and you get them, I mean, if you get the kids involved with it, you get their interest peaked, then you get the parents' interest peaked. And then that way, those kids remember. Like, I remember being a kid in the third grade, and I was getting soccer lessons from Lee Callishaw, who is a kicker's legend, you know, coached the club for 22 years, played for almost eight. You know, I remember that. And yeah. It wasn't like I was a soccer person all my life growing up. I didn't really, you know, I played soccer. I played in high school, sucked. But I'm a big black kid in the South. They were like, no, you're not about to play midfield. You're about to play offensive lineman. So, I mean, that's why I grew up playing. But it's like when I came back from college and whatnot, I was looking for something to do. And I remember like, oh, snap, the Richmond Kickers. And I didn't know they were still around. And it's not like you saw them on the news and stuff. Plus, I was in college. So I wasn't really paying attention to what was happening in Richmond like I should have been. But it was just more so the fact that once I found the club was back around and I got able to go back, it was like lock and step. It felt like home to me.
Well, do you feel like, and I agree with you, with I think getting in the schools or even getting kids out to camps or, you know, maybe some type of like, you know, an academy system, right, where you can get these kids involved at such an early age and maybe break that stereotype of, you know, a big black kid has to go play offensive line when he can maybe play center back or he can go do whatever he's got to do, right? Like, do you think that, like, breaking, like, getting more, you know, and I feel like I hate wording it this way, but getting more color, whether it's Hispanic or African American, and kind of getting that into the youth systems or getting that around the club, like, may break up that stereotype and may kind of include the entire city even more with it?
I think 100% it would, because that's the reason why. And I mean, granted, I'm one of the few African Americans that podcast about soccer. You know, it's not a lot of us, but yeah. For those that do, we're extremely passionate about it. And I think that's one of the great things. I think that's one of the things you do have to focus on. I know it's a hard question to kind of phrase because you don't want to say the wrong thing or get it misinterpreted.
Yeah.
But I understand what you're asking. Yes, I think every club should look at extending itself out into the urban community, the African-American community, the Latin community, the Asian community, for instance. You know, and some clubs are going to get pushback. Some clubs are going to be like, well, why are we putting the resources there? These people aren't interested. But you never know until you try, you know? I'd rather have my team or my club put in the effort and say, like, hey, we tried not just for 1 year, but, like, sustainable, like, 2-3 years of trying to recruit, trying to be there, trying to set up these camps, make them affordable. And if it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. You wash your hands of it. You know, you don't. But you can't just half-ass it. You can't just be like, oh, we're just going to throw money at it and see if it works and not put any work into it. I think that's the issue with it because, and I'm not just speaking about getting different demographics in the club or into the building and things like that. I think it's just more so of a thing of you have to be intentional with your words and what you are doing. I think a lot of clubs, If they were honest with themselves, you know, if they were honest with themselves to ask the people in the urban communities about like, hey, do you think we're doing a good job of representing you? The honest answer would probably be no, because the only black players that they see are the ones on the field. The only Latin players that you see are on the field, you know, basketball. If you really think about it, basketball is the only sport really where you see a black head coach, a black GM, you know, black ownership groups. With Jay-Z and Nelly and Michael Jordan, you know, I think if soccer is a great sport where it can happen, but I think if they're more diverse and doing those things and giving people those opportunities, and not just saying like of giving it as like a token of like, hey, we got one in, we did it, like no, but actually giving these people the opportunity and chances to coach, you know, that's why like last year. I mean, and granted, David Buelow, he didn't have the greatest record-wise. We went on a 7-game losing streak where we didn't score a goal. For any of those that's listened to my podcast during that stretch, it was extremely difficult to be positive. It is. You find a lot of colorful ways to cover up cursing. because we don't curse in our podcast, so we had to figure out cool ways how to disguise it. But it was still cool to the fact that I know, like, hey, we have an African-American coach that represents me, you know?
Yeah.
Because so many times when you get into soccer, you watch soccer, you see the Portuguese coach or the Italian coach or the English coach, and you hear about the old boys network of, like, Sam Allardyce. Sam Allardyce could literally get fired and get a job within the next week. No one knows how. Like, I swear he has naked photos of somebody's wife that he's like, hey, look, I'll leave these if you don't hire me. It's somewhere. I don't understand it. But a coach such as David Buell gets his chance. And I mean, granted, I understand it record-wise. I wish he would have got it in the second year, but that's neither here nor there. But it was cool to have a coach of color represent my club in my city that's played in my club and city. And that when I said I had conversations about him, it wasn't as if, you know, I had to be cautious with my words or figure out a cool conversation to have. It was like generally like talking to one of my uncles. You see more coaches of color coming up. I think there's one in Hartford. There's another one in Tulsa. I believe there's one more. I can't quite remember. But, Colorado. You know, so the start is there, but I kind of wish there would be more. And not just as being coaches, possibly being owners or GMs.
Yeah, or assistant coaches or any type of thing where you just want to see that, you know, you want to see that growth. Because, I mean, like you said, and I'm sure you're not the only one, it allowed you to feel that connection, help you feel that connection. And whether it's with your club or another fan with another's, you know, their club, like, it's a good thing to feel that connection and see that connection. And obviously, you just want that for the growth of the sport and the growth of the culture in general. So, I mean, like, I'm with you on that, man. I completely agree there. But I mean, like, and one thing you said that I thought was funny when you were thinking of colorful ways to talk about a shitty losing streak. I mean, like, I'm a Mets fan. I'm a Knicks fan. I'm a Jets fan, man. Like, it's tough after a while to just say, fuck this. Like, I hate it. Like, I don't even understand how you operate as a team. So, I feel you on
man,
that.
Man, like, honestly, yo, like, the teams that I like, because I live in Virginia. So there's no real pro sports team. I mean, granted the Kickers, but there's no other pro sports team in the state of Virginia outside of the Richmond Kickers. So I'm not like a Redskins fan. I'm a Tennessee Titans fan. They've sucked all the way up to this past year. I'm an Orlando Magic fan. Outside of what? The Dwight years and Penny Hardaway years, they've been trash.
Yep.
And I'm a Red Sox fan, but that's only because like my uncle played for the AAA team back in the 70s and 80s.
All right.
So I follow them, but I can't. I don't want to be like, oh, I'm a Red Sox fan. You know, that's not me. You know, I don't watch enough baseball to be like can tell you a bunch of people on the team.
100%. All right, well, I want to dive a little bit more into the Richmonds. I can't speak. The Richmond Kickers. Wow. Yeah, it's been a long quarantine. These days are just blending together and I don't even know. But last year, obviously the first year they dropped down from championship and they go to League One, right? How was that jump in general to you? Like when you found out that the Kickers weren't going to operate in championship once that divide happened and they were going to go operate at the League One level, were you like, I don't know, like a little salty about it? Were you like, okay, if this is what we have to do to keep the club going, this is it? Like what was your initial take?
So let's start it like this. The start of not last year, the year before that, we just came off of a losing season. And this is after a year where we got to the playoffs. We lost to Louisville in the first round. You know, that game still haunts me because George Davis IV scored, and he used to play for us the previous year. And I'm like, damn, we lost to him. So that year, before we went down, we were like, all right, we had one bad year. And this is when we still had to deal with DC United about how they were loan players. And so we're like, all right, cool, we can strengthen. We can do fine. We're going to do fine. And my honest of hearts, I didn't think we were like a top-tier USL club because that's when Louisville started kicking into gear. New York Red Bulls had that amazing team with Adams and all of them. I think Tampa Bay just got it, and FC Cincinnati they were playing like FIFA Ultimate Team, and everyone else was like playing like Game Boy Advance FIFA. Like they were on a whole different level. So I was like, all right, we're not one of the top teams in the East. I was like, we're in it. We're mid-tier. I was expecting like a last shot playoffs. If we missed it by like a point, I was like, all right, cool. I wasn't expecting the year that we had. Like, we were dog awful. Like, we were horrible. I would say this. That team that was in USL, that last team that was in USL Championship compared to the team that was in USL League One, the team in USL League One could beat that team was in the championship by four goals. Easy. It was that bad. So right around the summer, we started hearing rumors about, you know, USL is looking to expand and looking to make, because the first rumor we heard about how they were about to make another division. And we were like, all right, cool. Maybe that's something we should do. And then we start hearing the rumors, more concrete rumors about, oh, they're making another league. So we were like, all right, is this league going to replace? Is this league going to be lower than PDL? Is this league going to be league, you know, in between PDL and championship?
Yeah.
And then we heard that it's going to be League One. So we're like, all right, cool. So nothing was confirmed yet. And I mean, granted, I don't think any of us really knew we were about to get owners because this is the last year we're still owned by the youth club. And the thing is, when you're owned by a youth club, there's only a certain amount of money that you can spend on players coming in. So it's not like these guys are getting like top tier dollars, you know? And it's not like Richmond was an unattractive site. Like, we had Brian Umby, George Davis IV, Hugh Roberts. Like, we had great players in USL. The thing is, we couldn't pay them or keep them here long enough because, well, you're relying on a youth club. So it was a revolving door, and we were relying on the loans from DC United. And these were guys that, oh, we're gonna loan them to you, and they're gonna stay here for the year. It was pretty much, no, you'll get them the day of, and oh, well, we're in the US Open Cup, so we're gonna call all your guys back, and you gotta sign up a whole bunch of guys that play pickup soccer after work.
Yeah.
So we were kind of at that point, we were just like, man, we'll take whatever, dude. Like, if we stay in USL Championship, then it's not going to be pretty next year, but whatever. If we go to League One, and I think that's where kind of the arrogance of us coming into last year, where we were kind of like, are we one of the more established clubs? I think it was us at FC Tucson, Orlando City, and Toronto that had previously ever played a game.
Yeah.
Orlando took a year off. They took a year off of last year as well, so I don't know if the club came back or not. Toronto FC was in USL League One with us as well. And FC Tucson, I think, was coming up from PDL and also South Georgia. So we were like, all right, we seem to be doing pretty good. We seem to be having it. And I think one of the biggest missteps was having a rookie head coach, David Buehler. And he wasn't a rookie head coach in terms of games coach, but this was his first head coaching job. Previous to this, he was the U-17 head coach for the Richmond Kickers and the U-19 coach. And a rookie ownership group. So I think we were late on the eight ball about getting players signed. This year, we've done a better job of it. Actually, we were making the point in our previous podcast about when we talked about the roster and everything, about how at that point last year, we only had 12 players on the roster. This year, we had 24. So we were late on the eight ball of getting players signed, getting them to come into the club. And that kind of slowed down everything. And then about like how we played that year in the championship, it was horrible football. It was horrible. But I mean, I think everyone was just kind of happy to have the club stick around. I mean, of course, no one wants to lose their club at all. That's the worst thing that could happen. No one wants to be the Bury of the United States. You know, you don't want to be known as living through the era of where the longest professional club is U.S. Soccer folds because we don't have money.
Yeah.
So that's one of the main things that we're happy about. And one of the reasons why we were kind of just like, all right, we got owners now. You better make it work because we need something good to happen. But well, I mean, that's pretty much it.
That you said that, like, you know, you guys maybe came with a little bit of an arrogance because you guys were coming down from championship. You had, like, you're right, you have that history. But then when you think about it, you have, you know, Buehler, who was, like you said, not that rookie head coach because of games played, but this was his first professional job, right? You have a new ownership group, something like that. So, I mean, like, I'm sure that that played a major impact. And 2019, I wouldn't come out and say it was the greatest year. You guys finished ninth in the league. Not great. But do you feel that, like, you guys have kind of taken some lessons from last year and that you're going to move forward with? You already said in roster construction one that that's something you've seen change from, you know, last offseason to this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty much the biggest thing, was making sure that, one, that we had a roster in place.
Yeah.
Well, let me take that back. Yes, the roster was the biggest thing, but I think it was when the news broke that Beulah was let go, one of the things that we talked about was, all right, this is the ownership body. They're telling us that it's not win now, but winning is being prioritized. It's no longer just go out there and try your best, and whatever happens, happens. Because it's very easy to do that in U.S. soccer. It's very easy to be that club that's just like, winning games? Fuck that. We're not doing that. We're trying to make these dollars.
Exactly. And,
you know, for them to let go of the head coach, granted, he did better in the end stretch of the year. He had a big win over South Georgia, win over Fort Madison and Fort Madison. I think he got the double over Greenville. So he had impressive wins. I mean, granted, we still were 9th out of 10 teams. It wasn't like we were that better, but things were getting better. You could see how things were working out. And when they let him go, it was kind of just like, all right, the spotlight's on. Like, if, you know, I don't want to wish anything bad. I hope he does the best. But if Sawatzky bombs, this doesn't look good in the ownership group. But I think one was getting the roster constructed properly, getting a head coach in that had a plan. And then also one of the key things was allowing the head coach the opportunity to pick the players that he wanted that fit his style. Because last year it was, you had multiple people trying to be the cooks. You know, everyone was trying to be the head chef. Everyone was trying to choose, like, oh, I want this player, I want that player. But now, since the head coach is now the GM, he has final say.
Yeah.
So it's no more of that. I think the other thing that was key was getting in players that show leadership ability, because our roster was young. And we were young in places where you didn't need to be young at. Up top and midfield. We were good age at goalkeeper and defensive and defensive line, where we were solid. But the thing was, we couldn't keep anyone from not cutting us up in the midfield. So I think we added key additions there. I think we added key additions up top. I think Kyle Vintner, if the season was started right now, will be early choice for MVP. He would be my MVP candidate right now.
Okay.
I'm not afraid to, like, I'm fully believe that. And I'm glad that he was chosen as that captain, because I think that was something that we were missing, was that real captain leadership. And to me, someone is a captain that looks like, hey, I'm going to pat you in the back when you're doing right, but I'm going to cuss you out with a fiery will if you mess up. And that looks like Kyle.
Well, I mean, look, I think that with any team, you need someone who's going to be like that passionate player, someone who's going to kind of maybe give a little bit. And I don't want to say like you didn't have this last year, but I'm saying for any successful team, maybe give a little bit of a backbone and like we'll step up and get in someone's face if necessary and needed. Right. And if he's that guy for you, then, I mean, you know, like, go, good for you guys. Good for it. Right. And I mean, last year, like you said, you did have some experience in net and in defense. I'm mainly looking at Akira Fitzgerald. Like, when I was first looking at rosters being constructed in general with USL League One, he was a name that stuck out to me, right, because he was playing with the Rowdies. You know, if anyone's paid attention to USL over the past couple years, like, he was a notable name that was taking that jump down to League One from the Championship. So I think you guys had some pieces, and I agree with you that if you can keep someone in power who has the power for a decent amount of time and starts to build that rapport and starts to build the roster the way he wants it, then players will get used to that and success will follow, right? Like, if you keep switching up those, like the cooks in the kitchen, like you said, like, it's just success isn't going to come from that, because players and staff don't know where to follow and who to look at. So I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, I'm fine.
You're all good. I was just going to say, like, I think that the Joe Gallardo move, like, you talked about it a little bit earlier. Obviously, look, as a fan, you probably wanted to keep him around. The dude was first team all League One last year. He was balling last year. But you sell him, you get a profit. That's what you got to have to do at this level, right? But I think you guys have made some moves to really bolster your roster for 2020.
Yeah, and I think, and I'm totally fine if the Richmond Kickers are going to be like, hey, we're going to be the club. And they kind of already said this. I think this is the direction how the club is going to go, where we're going to bring in young talent, but we're going to flip them, like, for big money.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's what he did with Joey Gallardo. They took a player that was part of U20, was a very creative player. I mean, one of the most creative players. Look at the goal against Greenville. Look at the goal against FC Tucson. Look at the goal against South Georgia, where he had three goal of the years, and I do not understand how USL League One chose a goal that was a penalty kick over that goal. I do not understand it to this day. Because, one, he had a goal from 50 yards out. That it wasn't like he chipped the keeper and all that. That's goal of the week. And then another goal, he walked through six defenders. I don't know. But whatever. but when you have a player like that, and you could take him and flip him and sell him to an MLS 2 team in Real Madrid, that's big. You know, that kind of catches the attention. And it's kind of like you had two different arguments in Richmond that was kind of going on about this, because some people was like, well, we let our most creative player go. And this is the time we didn't sign a striker. And a lot of people was like, well, we're letting one of our most creative players go. Do you think we can attract players? And then you had the side that I was on, were more just like, if I'm a player and I see that this guy, even though he had a bad year, I mean, not a bad year. Even though the team he was on had a bad year. But an MLS 2 team is taking him? That kind of makes me think, well, damn, they must be doing something right. Well, let me go try that. And instead of me going sitting on a bench at Phoenix Rising or at New Mexico United, I could go to Richmond and then get flipped and sold to a USL championship team. I mean, and I think that's the reason why League One is such an important league. I mean, honestly, you can make the argument it's one of the most important leagues. It's probably the most important league in U.S. soccer, because it's truly the middle ground between the semi-pro professional leagues of USL League 2, NAISA, NASL, whatever, PDL, all those, and the professional leagues of Championship and MLS. We're the middle ground. So we find all those players like a Connor Antley, who probably would have been somewhere marketing right now in a marketing job, but he plays in South Georgia for a year and then gets sold and flipped to Indy 11. Joey Gallardo, he didn't even have a club last year. Him and Riley Kraft did not have a club last year. Come to Richmond, one stays, and now the team is being built around him, and the other gets sold to Real Monarchs. You know? Yeah. Things like that.
I mean, I do agree with you there. I mean, I really feel like, especially the Monarchs are maybe that first team. The Monarchs and Indy 11 are really those teams that are seeing the benefit of League One and like, yeah, like we're going to get, we'll pay a fee for these guys out of League One, right? We may get them on a discounted rate a little bit if we were, you know, going to actually pay a fee for another championship team or like, or whatever. And the Monarchs, look, they go out, they get Joey Gallardo, they get Chris Bermudez, Arturo Rodriguez, three standout players from last year. And you know what? I really hope they have success and they do well on the Monarchs, because all that's going to mean is that more championship clubs, maybe even some MLS clubs, are going to look at, you know, the kickers to see, ooh, who's the next Joey Gallardo coming out of the kickers, or who's the next, you know, Arturo Rodriguez coming out of North Texas, or whatever it may be, and pay those fees and help grow the league. And it's all a good thing. And I'm really happy that the Monarchs did that. I'm really happy that Indy 11 went out and they got Connor Antley. And I feel like the kickers are kind of leaning towards, you know, getting their own Antley and Ian, and eventually looking to sell him, because he looks pretty good himself.
Oh, he does. Ian Antley is solid as a rock. Like, I stood beside the dude. Oh, he's solid. He's solid as a rock. Yeah. He's going to be legit. If he's anything like his brother, he's legit.
I've heard rumors he's apparently the better soccer player of the two. And if, you know, if Connor was the first ever transfer inter USL like that for a fee, then sky's the limit for the kickers getting a nice transfer fee for Ian eventually one day.
Look, if he plays up to his potential, he does great, and then we flip him and sell him, it's the best of both worlds for me.
Is there anyone else on this roster that you could see potentially being, you know, that next due sold, maybe next offseason or like two off seasons from now? I mean, like, obviously, like a guy like Akwe, right? Like, he was second team all USL League One last year. Obviously, a standout. He's a former Red Bull 2 guy. They just developed talent at Red Bull. So, I mean, like, I feel like he's a dude that could potentially get sold. But, you know, what's your take on him, and then maybe anyone else you're thinking?
Honestly, Akwe was the one for me that I was shocked when we bought him back.
Yeah.
I really thought that he was going to leave us because I was like, well, this guy's second. You can really make the case. He should have been first team. I think if we would have won a couple of more games, he definitely would have had that first team status about him. But he's a great person. He's someone that I truly thought that there's no way we're keeping him around. We're going to sell him.
You thought he was in the Gallardo.
Another player. Him and Gallardo, I totally would have thought it. Another player, Stanley Alves. And the reason why I say him, and this is Shanier. For those who know, my co-host's name is Shanier. This is his favorite player on the team. The kid hasn't even played a pro game for us yet. We've only seen him in preseason. But I would say is he does a great job of holding the ball up. And from that position, he's able to distribute passes all over the field. And he has, like, this sneaky pace about him. He reminds me a lot of, like, Harry Kane. But this is, like, right before Harry Kane, like, blew up. This is, like, Harry Kane in White Hart Lane. That Harry Kane. That's who he reminds me of. And, like, his play is so smooth.
The Kickers might have the next Harry Kane, is what you're telling me.
Hey, we might just do. And sell him for a lot of money, which I'm totally fine with.
Hey, that's how you got to survive, especially with these League One teams. You sell one player for $50,000, $100,000, you're surviving for the next, you know, 5-7 years off that, right? Like, that's what you got to do.
100%. I mean, look, until we get pro route, and I think everyone that is in UN Soccer podcasting has sat down at one time or another and described their own. Like, this is how pro rel will work, and this is how this will happen. This is how that has happened. And I think until that happens, I think the only way how lower league clubs that are not in the championship can survive is flipping and selling players. And by golly, not everyone can win a championship, but everyone can flip and sell players. And if Richmond Kickers are the best at it, then, hey, we're doing something right.
Look, I've given up on those pro rel hopes and dreams, or, like, that traditional sense of pro rel. But, I mean, I really think that pro rel could happen inter USL, and I think that would be a major drawing point to the league, and it would also allow, you know, for more money in the league to kind of get passed around, which is a good thing, and then allow these teams to survive. But I don't know, like, it's we'll see if one day if that happens. Nowhere soon, in my opinion. We'll see. Elliot, thank you for coming on, man, and talking for a little bit with me and kind of just breaking down the Kickers. I feel like I've learned a lot about Richmond, and now I have an interest in them even more than what I had last year for 2019. Where can the people listen to you?
They can listen to us at River City 93. That's River City 93. You can follow us on Twitter at River City 93 and Instagram as well. We're kind of in the process right now of coming up with a second podcast. We don't have a lot of details on it yet, but we're slowly working on it. But yeah, you know, we tweet real stuff. We tweet about any and everything. So interact with us. We'll interact back. Follow us. We're all there.
And definitely make sure you listen to River City 93. It's one of my, you know, favorite podcasts. I take in all and any kind of soccer content, and I don't care the team. I don't care the league. I'm listening to it all. So make sure you guys listen to River City 93. Elliot, thank you, man, for coming on. I appreciate it.
No problem, man.